cash rules everything around me. Green, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo. What's up, everybody? My name is Michael Govier, and this is my regular voice. Maybe a radio voice to some. I speak this way pretty regularly. And I'm joined today for the FTM Fantasy Baseball Podcast by Eric Cross. We both work at FTM, both part of the FTN Fantasy Baseball crew. So, Eric, we were going to do the show a couple weeks ago, but you were taking off, going out of town, enjoying yourself. I hope you had a good time. So I'm glad that we're getting the chance to do this now as we sit in for Vladdy and Matty Davis here on the FTM Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun podcasting with you. And as someone that has known Michael for, well, how long have we known each other? 3, 4, 5 years, something. I can't remember at this point. I can confirm that this is his voice. Absolutely, it is. This is what you see is what you get with Govier. There's no, he's the same in person as he is on the Twitter sphere or X sphere, whatever we want to call it these days.
Same goes for you, my friend. I think you know that. I don't remember the first time we actually met, but we did put together when we were part of Matty Davis's tag team league, and we did 2 years. The first year we led most of the season. It's a 15 team NFBC roto style, and we fell apart at the very end and lost. But then the next year we crushed all the way through. We did not relent our lead, and we won that thing last year. And that was for me, it was the highlight of any of the titles I've won so far in fantasy. First off, it's the biggest prize I'd ever won.
Yep. And absolutely.
Second of all, the fact that we co-managed did it together, and I was always kind of an anti co-manager because I just felt I couldn't. I'm like, oh, I don't want to like listen to somebody else. I know everything and I just want to listen to myself. It sounds too complicated, but I ended up really enjoying working with you and co-managing together. It turned me on to the experience and it's changed my philosophy on that now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was great too, because, you know, right off the bat, is I think the first year we did it, we were just like, you know, Twitter DM or texting, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like during the draft. And then the second, we just hopped on, like, I think it was right here in StreamYard during the draft. So we could actually, you know, verbally talk, you know, it's a lost art these days. But, so like we got off on a, you know, great foot with that draft. I don't forget who we picked at all, but I think we had a pretty good draft. And then, yeah, like even throughout the year, did we agree on everything? No, but no. We worked it out. We compromised, you know, we learned from each other and we made it work. And yeah, I think we got a lead in, you know, May or June and just held that lead the entire year. And it was a great experience. And I would definitely do it again. And that's kind of similar to you. Like I was kind of a little bit leery of doing the co-manager thing, but it was a lot of fun. I kind of wish we didn't, you know, lose that lead the first year. So we were like right in the hunt with it. I think we finished like third or fourth that first year, something like that. And then crushed it the second year. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. And, you know, we didn't do it this year just because I was just strapped financially. This year was a tight year for me, and I was finishing my master's, and now I'm working. I got a job I started, like, last week, or this week. And so it was disappointing, but, you know, we understand. You understand. Life goes on, and maybe we'll do it again. I hope that this is the last time I struggle to build a bankroll and that going forward we can reconvene and do it again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's always fun, and maybe we can get that title back next year.
Yeah, I don't even know who's winning that this year. You know, Matty started it a couple years ago, and there's been a lot of turnover, but there's been some of the same cast of characters co-managing together. And you know, it's funny, Matty's not gonna like this, I don't think, but Matty started this because I think it was him and his partner were like really good at co-managing, so they said, hey, let's start a tag team league and then we'll take everybody's money. But they finished at like the bottom of the league the first year. Sorry, Matty.
Backfired a little bit there.
Yeah, I think he did better the next year, but I just thought that was funny. And, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, you got to laugh at other people. Don't forget, by the way, it's a great opportunity. Fantasy football drafts are mostly finished up, but it's still not too late to join in on the FTN High Stakes Football Package featuring one of the industry's top money leaders of the past decade. It's Nelson Souza, man. The franchise. You get access to content all draft season. And that's why it doesn't matter if your draft has already occurred or not. Because once the regular season kicks in, you get to connect with Nelson along with the rest of their fabulous team. We got so many great minds over there. Our fantasy baseball team's awesome, but our fantasy football team is just as good, if not better, possibly, because they've got so much data and experience. So Nelson's world-famous fade list, targets, fades, rankings, and in-season fab help, where he also gives you some insights on what he hears around the league. He's got some connections, it seems, and he's really useful in the Discord. So make sure you use our promo code for Nelson's High Stakes Package. It's 20% off That's high stakes 20. High stakes 2-0. And you will not regret it. All right. So we had a great conversation, me and Paul Spohr, when I guested on this show a couple weeks back. Got some good feedback. Thanks, everybody, by the way. For those of you that listen to Vlad and Maddie regularly and your contributors are always giving you what you want here on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Show, it was really nice to get the feedback that I did because I didn't know if people would like me or not. Not everybody's going to like you, right? Eric, do you realize that not everyone's going to like you when you do a podcast or you put out your opinion on fantasy baseball?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why one of the first things I tell, you know, new writers, new podcasters, whatever, people are just trying to like get into our nice little industry here, that no matter how good you are, no matter how knowledgeable you might be, not everyone's going to like you. And that's fine. That's the same thing I tell my daughter, my son. Hey, not everyone's going to like you. That's life. You know, you've got to trust in yourself, trust in what you're doing, and you'll be fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you all the way, my friend. I just think people, you got to be patient. Take your time. Don't panic. And remember that you have something to offer, okay? But don't expect everyone to like you. That's the thing I learned. And when me and Paul did that show a couple weeks ago, I think what I really appreciated about it was that we just talked honestly about what we learned this year. And, you know, it's been a bad season for me. I think, Eric, I just got to say that. This is probably going to be, as a public analyst, and maybe just saying these words out loud will turn people off. Like, why would I listen to this guy? He's having a bad year. First off, anybody can have a bad year, right? But secondly, as a public-facing analyst, I have to reckon with the fact that this has not been my season, and I'm really trying to look at what I did right and what I did wrong. You know, whether it was the OCs I'm in or the main event or even a couple of DCs. You know, the Palazzo podcast is my main podcast I do, and we do a Palazzo podcast invitational, which is six different DCs under an overall umbrella, and even that one hasn't gone that great. So I'm just curious, how much NFBC are you playing this year? How much did you play? What kind of leagues did you play in?
Yeah, so I was in several DCs, four or five, something along those lines. I also was in TGFBI, NERF, Under the Earth, kind of overall competition. And I think that might have been, oh, I think I did one Gladiator as well. I think I had the itch for one of those Gladiators too.
How'd that go?
It's not going so great so far. See, that team, I am, that's 12th place right now. I'm not.
But do you like the format though?
Oh, I love the format. I love okay. It. It's obviously there's a lot of risk involved, and you got the added strategy, obviously, because you got no benches in there. But yeah, it was a fun little new game, new style that the NFBC brought on, and I think NFBC does a great job. They're always kind of looking for a new, games and stuff to keep people interested. So I thought that was a great thing, and it got, I think, very well received by the community in general. But I'm kind of there with you though, just the overall season, more so on NFBC. I haven't had that great of a year. My DCs are like 6th, 8th, 9th, not the greatest year in the kind of those formats. And but I have learned, that's the thing, even if it's a down year, you still try to learn from it, see what went wrong, why you're in the spot you're in, and try to improve in those areas next year, and and get to a better spot in the standings. So even though it hasn't been the greatest of years for me, not going to be a huge money year in terms of just winnings and whatnot. I still learned a lot this year. I try to do every season, whether it's redraft or dynasty, whatever, and try to get better the next year. So that's what I'm doing.
That's one of the things I learned about you, because there's misconceptions about you. People think of you, rightfully so, as a prospects guru. You are. I mean, you dedicate your show and you focus in on prospects, and that's a great thing. But what I learned from playing in the tag team with you is that you have an excellent knowledge of all baseball and all formats and all styles. It's not just a prospects guy. And I wonder, honestly, does it bother you to be labeled that way, or just people just not getting an opportunity to get to know you? And actually, maybe you see it as like a benefit, like a tribute to you, because you're so well known for prospects that, hey, you know what? It could be way worse.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It used to kind of bug me just a little bit. I'd be like, hey, I do redraft content too. Like I did the waiver wire article every week on Fantrax for several years. So, but it really doesn't bother me that much anymore. Not that I ever did too much to begin with, because, I've been able to, build, a decent little brand for myself, fortunately, over the years. And that, was based a lot on Dynasty and Prospects. The people come to me for redraft content too, but you know, just the fact that people trust me with, you know, dynasty and prospect work, and you know, just hearing, you know, like, you know, I'll get, you know, DMs or on Discord or just, you know, people tweeting at me saying, okay, like, hey, you know, I turned this dynasty team around. It was 12th place last year. Now I'm in second place, you know, all because of you. Like, those are like the best things in the world, right? Just the fact that it, obviously I do this because I love it. And I, you know, we love baseball and love, you know, making content, but just, hearing that you're helping somebody, you know, whether it's helping them, you know, enjoy it and learn about it, or you know, improve their teams, win some money, win a trophy, win bragging rights, it's always fun to hear. So, yeah, and if that's, you know, been mostly in the, you know, dynasty and prospect world. That's fine. You know, I love dynasty and prospects. That's why I kind of gravitated towards that area of our industry back in the day, and kind of when I was getting going, and I love it.
Hell yeah, man! I love it too, and I don't care what people think of prospect dynasty baseball. If it's not their bread and butter, it's become much more popular. I think that's, sure that's something you've talked about a lot. It's really exploded. It feels like it's become almost, I would argue, because, you know, a lot of us here, we're focusing on NFBC, and this pod dedicates a lot of time to NFBC play, and there's no dynasty leagues, at least as far as I know, on NFBC. And yet, I think it's might be the most popular format now. I really do. Do you think that's off base?
No, I really don't. I'd say if you went back, you know, obviously, let's say 10 years ago, it's probably 80%+ of leagues were redraft. And then, you know, maybe 5 years ago, it's probably still like 70-30, 75-25. But I think now, probably 50-50, and maybe even a little bit more towards, if you kind of include like keeper formats into the dynasty umbrella, I think, yeah, because it adds that added bonus. And if you have that itch, you know, in November, December, and you're like, oh, you can't wait for the next season. I mean, hey, if you're in Dynasty League, you can still be, you know, having trade talks, or you got your off-season drafts. So there's a lot of fun stuff to keep you engaged during, you know, the dead of the off-season. And just that added strategy, too, of like, hey, you know, you're falling out of contention for whatever reason. You know, redraft, all right, you know, season's kind of over, whatever, you move on to the next year. But hey, you're falling out of contention, you start making trades, building for 2024, and there's a lot that added, you know, added fun, added, you know, tactics that you can go, that you can dive into. So I think just that kind of concept alone, and like your that long term slow build, is definitely very intriguing for a lot of people, including myself, obviously.
Yeah. Eric Cross, by the way, on what used to be known as Twitter, EricCross04. You make sure you follow him. And he does the Toolshed Fantasy podcast, which is awesome. Him and Chris Clegg do that together. That's a great show. I'm not just saying that. I can genuinely attest to it. If you've never played Dynasty and you want to dabble into it, you want to kind of get a taste for it, this is a great man and a great way to get into the mix and check out what's going on with Dynasty Baseball. I love prospects. I love Dynasty Baseball, but I also love NFBC play too. And, you know, I'm wondering how you approach this season. Was there any trends coming into 2023 from, I guess, mainly from a redraft perspective and from the NFBC perspective that you were noticing? Or, you know, since you play in DCs as well, do you think prospects are a lot more viable in DCs and therefore maybe the most weighted in favor of using them among any format at NFBC?
Yeah, I could definitely see that, you know, this year I've tried to go more conservative with my approach, especially in DCs over the last couple of years, because, you know, 5-6 years ago, I kind of fell into the, you know, getting those buzzy names and the kind of loading up on prospects when I first started doing like these DC or draft and hold formats. And it really burned me the first couple of years in some leagues, because, you know, obviously we have to deal with injuries. That's unfortunately a part of the game, and it feels like even more so this year. But so I'd be running out of options to fill some of those spots. So I have this guy that's still in Double A that I thought would be up by now or closer to being up. So I went more conservative, getting those, you know, I don't know why first name comes to my mind is Tony Kemp. Like, just like the kind of guys that kind of, you know, they're boring. They're not the sexy draft pick. It's not like drafting a top prospect and upside isn't quite there, but you need these guys, because when you have 3 second baseman on the IL and you got to start someone like Tony Kemp or whoever it might be, you got to have that depth there. So I've kind of shied a bit away from prospect, not just in DC, just in all kind of redraft formats, unless there's like a guy here or there where I'm just like, boom, all in. Like this year was Corbin Carroll, and that worked out pretty well. Like I was all in on him. And like that fifth ish round ADP, like top 60, 75 pick or so. He was going in March drafts. And if it's someone like that where I'm like, all right, like this guy, I'm like 100% in on, I'll kind of jump ADP a little bit. But for the most part, I have kind of shied away. But at the same time, in those DCs, once you have that depth and you're like, all right, I think I have enough, you know, major league depth to withstand injuries, and then you can maybe go the last round, and obviously the top prospects are gone by, you know, rounds 40, but you still can get some guys like I was getting like Jordan Westberg, these types of guys in that round. So yeah, I think definitely if you do it right, there's prospects that have a lot of viability in DCs.
Yeah. Corbin Carroll was a guy that I was a little paranoid about coming into the season. I didn't know if the power would be there, really. Obviously, with the rule changes and his ability to just fly around the base pass. I mean, we've seen some, you know, maybe not Bobby Witt speed, but pretty close to it, right? I mean, yeah. Who's faster? Who do you think's faster between those two dudes?
Ooh, that's a good question. And see, this is why, I mean, okay, I'll give you an answer. I'll say it's probably Witt, but this is why I want, like, some sort of skills competition. At the All-Star break, like, you know, who can, you know, run around, you know, around the bases the quickest, you know, the strongest outfield arm, you know, most accurate arm, stuff like that. You know, like that, you ever see that video of the bunting contest over in Japan or
oh, Korea? Yeah.
I forget, somewhere's over there. I think it was Japan, like the bunting, in the targeted zones, like stuff like that would be a lot of fun. But yeah, I think it's Witt, but then that would be a fun race around the bases.
Well, the answer is, who cares? In the end, right? They're both fast. They're going to steal a lot of bags.
Exactly.
You're win-win either way. I mean, did you see Witt taking a big jump this year in your own view, in your own research?
I did, yeah, because obviously he went 20-30 last year. And yeah, like, you know, people are like, oh, like the, you know, average wasn't the greatest. You know, he doesn't walk a lot. You know, exit velos weren't super elite. But this is a guy that showed more patience in the minors, more power in the minors. And it seemed like many were just kind of like, ah, well, he's not going to take that second step forward. Why not? I mean, yeah, there's always a sophomore slump. We know that, but why couldn't he take a step forward? And now he's, you know, on pace for, you know, what, like a 30-45 season or something along those lines. And yeah, I was like, why can't he show more patience? He has in the past. Why can't he, you know, get that, you know, the exit velos up he has in the past? So yeah, I didn't think it was going to be like this good. Like he's been, you know, maybe a top three hitter over the last like 3 months or so. But I did think he was to take that step forward, and that's why I was fine taking him kind of where he was in like that back end of the first round area.
Yeah, I guess I also want to fine tune that point though, because you know around June, if you forget what you thought of Witt coming into 2023, by June it was like, man, this guy can't get on base frequently. Yep. Really struggles to make consistent contact, and then he really takes off here over the last 6 weeks, the second half of the season. And now he clearly, for everybody, I would assume, is a first-round pick. But did you even try to consider adding him in any dynasty leagues that you play in around that time frame when he was kind of being like, well, it's 2 months of the season. He just, maybe he's never going to be the guy who's an elite top 20 or top 15 guy.
Yeah, no, I tried. I was unsuccessful, unfortunately. didn't get any buy low opportunities on him, even though not for a lack of effort. But yeah, because we live, especially in the dynasty world, there's such like, what have you done for me now mentality. And even these guys that were elite tip of the top prospects like Bobby Witt, who was a consensus top three, top four, even, you know, number one in some rankings for fantasy purposes or even real life purposes too, you know, like, oh, he hasn't come out of the gates firing, you know, he hasn't come out of the gates and set the world on fire. I'm like, all right, you know, prospects don't always come out of the gates like Acuna, Soto, like Tatis. Like we've been spoiled by these guys over the last half decade or so. And that's why, like, same thing right now with Jordan Walker. You know, Jordan Walker is a guy that, well, obviously the hype was immense coming into the season, had that big spring training, hit two massive home runs in a game I was at down there in that first pitch Florida. And, you know, even though it hasn't been a great year for him, I tweeted out the other day, like his 650 PA pace is still like 25-10. His WRC plus is basically right the same with Gunnar Henderson. And the long term, there's still like a lot of upside there. So like he kind of fits that bill of, yeah, he didn't set the world on fire this year, but hey, look at the profile. Like, let's look at that, not look at the overall production, which hasn't even been that bad. But St. Louis has been a dumpster fire this year. And I think you're in line for potential huge return on investment if you buy low on him now, because I still think he's a top 25 player. I still think there's first round upside with this guy.
Wow. I absolutely agree with that. But I do think it's funny when people get caught up in the moment. And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, how do you get yourself out of those moments during the season where there's a lot of groupthink, or even there's just a lot of evidence in front of you that tells you, boy, maybe this guy is not all he's cracked up to be, but down the road here in the season, because you know baseball is a game of ebb and flows for, I mean, it's the streakiest game there ever was, especially for hitters specifically, right? So I guess I wonder what your mindset is, or how do you look at these individual moments? Is it strictly based on a player? Is it about the past trends with that player? Is it about overall experience of playing fantasy baseball? I'm curious how you look at those moments.
Yeah, it's really a case-by-case basis for me, and that's something I try to preach when it comes to, especially with young players, like with prospects, and regardless if they come up at 20, 24, 25, like, you know, a Walker at 20, a Michael Bush at 25, look at the profile and forget all the noise around it. You know, it's hard to do at times, but, you know, look at what they've done, what they've shown, you know, the metrics behind it, and, you know, and it doesn't always work out. That's the thing. Like, you could have what you think is a perfect process, and some of these guys aren't going to work out. You know, I will forever be linked to Jared Kelnick. It could be the year I could be 80 years old in the year, whatever, 2070, whenever I'll be 80. And it'll be, you know, Kelnick will be retired for 50 years at that point, and I'll still be linked to Jared Kelnick. Someone will still bring it up. And, you know, that happens. You know, even if you think your process is good, you're still going to have these misses. That's the thing with these young prospects. But that's why I try to, again, look at the individual profile and not kind of like maybe write a guy off like Michael Bush because he's 25, 26 debuting, you know, and just look at the profile and go from there. That's what I always try to stress.
Yeah, I think about the situations where, you know, last podcast I brought up Manny Machado. He got off to a terrible start.
Yep.
First off, that's a main event. I'm not going to drop him, and there's no trade. Right. So it's a lot easier to just be like, well, I'll wait for that to turn around. But when you're in leagues where you can make trades, and I know NFBC is not a heavy trade area, obviously. And, you know, I didn't play the Gladiator either, by the way. I really do want to play the Gladiator next year. I didn't really get it when it came out. There was a ton of hype. Hey, the Gladiator. And now I feel like I missed out on that. But for trade leagues, which to me bring a huge additional strategic element to your fantasy baseball play, I think there's a lot of regrets out there. I think there's a ton of people out there who panicked in the moment and they've given up on guys too soon and it came back to burn them. And I think that is always the moment to just step away from your app for the day. Like just walk away. Your lineups are set for the day. Go away. Go do something else. Go find something else to do with your life for a day. And then come back tomorrow. Think it over. Don't rush to judgment when you feel like it's really getting dark out there or it's looking bleak for a player. Like, relax, slow down. And remember, it's 162 games. I know we say that all the time, and everyone talks about the grind of MLB baseball is 162 games. There's a lot of talk about it, but I don't think there's enough mindsets that are dedicated to focusing on the longevity of the season, and they get caught up in. I think DFS has played a role in that too. MLB DFS has become a lot more popular, and the DFS mindset can creep into season-long players' heads and cause a lot of problems.
No, absolutely. I think you hit it on the head 100%, because again, it's a what have you done for me lately society that we're living in, especially in the fantasy baseball world. And yeah, Machado was a perfect example. I'm glad you brought him up because yeah, he was really bad to start the year, and then he's kind of cooled off a bit again lately, but then he went on that stretch over like, you know, June and July when he was the Machado of old. And you gotta again look at the track record, and like there was a reason why Machado was, you know, a second round pick or even a late first. And so he's, I think he was on like that 1-2 turn area for most part in ADPs this past spring.
But I know a lot about that. Why.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like this was a young guy that was hyped up. Like it wasn't like it was like a Bobby Witt. It wasn't like a guy that had 1 year under his belt. It was a guy that has what, 11, 12 years or so under his belt. And, you know, a guy that's been one of the more consistent players in baseball. So again, that's why I go back, like, preach this over and over to him blue in the face. Like, look at the profile of Machado. Yeah. Was he terrible to start the year? Yeah. Were you probably angry because he wasn't returning first round value for you? Absolutely. But how many guys do you think, Michael, you know, let's go with like a 15 teamer. How many guys that are drafted in the first round on average do you think return first round value end of the year? five, six, you know, a little bit under half, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe seven, but that might be too generous even.
Yeah, kind of like in that one-third to one-half range, maybe a little under. I have to go back and look. Obviously, Freddie Freeman always does. That's why I love Freddie Freeman. But yeah, like even you know early in the year, he obviously turned it on lately, and he's been one of the hottest hitters in baseball. But Julio Rodriguez was having a little bit of a, you know, not a bad year, but, you know, a little bit of a down year.
About Trey Turner. Trey Turner is a big example of a guy that everyone's been dumping on all season long, and now he's on fire. And this is not a big, I would assume, a less subset of this, but head-to-head, right now Trey Turner is making big, big waves for teams that held on to him or picked him up for their head-to-head playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, he was, you know, obviously a top three pick back in the spring, and I think was not even like a top 200 player through what, June or so, whatever it was, before he started turning it on. And yeah, now he's hitting home runs like he's Aaron Judge all of a sudden. And, you know, still stealing bags, and the average and OBP have all been super high. And he's back to being, absolutely, he's been like a top 10 player over the last 2 months or so. And yeah, you had to suffer through the beginning of the year. But if you found a way to, you know, get through that and you were still in contention for championship or a money spot with Turner slumping the first half of the year, and now like you got this guy kicking it into overdrive right now for the stretch run here, that's a golden thing to have.
Absolutely, my friend. No doubt about it. By the way, last time I was on the show, I realized I said absolutely 87 times. So I cannot believe nobody called me out for that after the fact when we posted the episode. But I'm the first one to admit it and recognize it. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Pod. It's me, Michael Govier, talking with Eric Cross. We both work at FTN. We're part of the... By the way, you know, so you joined up with FTN Baseball this year, right? And how have you enjoyed the experience so far? I'm not assuming you're going to rip it to shreds by any means. First off, Vlad is just everything that you've ever heard about Vlad is true. And everything he looks at to you or he appears to people to be on the outside as a really friendly and knowledgeable player, it's all as advertised. I love working with Vlad at FTN. The whole crew, we got a really, really tight crew. So I assume it's been nothing but good times this season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I'm not like, oh, it's been terrible. No, obviously, obviously it's been phenomenal. Yeah, I joined back in, I think it was December, I want to say, when the draft kit was kind of being put together. That was my piece for the draft kit. And then I started doing content consistently in January, I believe it was. And yeah, and Vlad and I kind of like talked about it off and on for like probably a year before we actually did it, and had a deeper talk out at First Pitch Arizona this past November. And then we kind of, you know, worked out the details and made it happen. And yeah, Vlad is probably one of the first people I met in person in this industry back in, it was my first year out in Arizona. So I think that was 2018, I think which year it was. But I remember being there the first night. We were out back at the hotel, and I, you know, after all the panels had been done, and I forget who told me, but someone was like, "Hey, Vlad Sedlo's looking for you." And me being still, you know, fairly new in the industry at that time, I was like, "Oh crap! Like Vlad Sedlo's looking for me. Like, this guy is like, you know, one of the bigger names in the industry." And he was just, you know, we just met, and he's like, "Hey, I just wanted to meet you and talk, get to know you," and just a genuinely really good guy, and obviously one of the best, you know, fantasy players around, one of the best fantasy analysts around for both baseball and football. I always have an appreciation for the, you know, I appreciate the people that do the one and also the people that do like multiple, because, you know, having to have, you know, both of those knowledge bases is a phenomenal thing to have. So, and Vlad is someone that's helped me personally with, you know, FAP. Obviously he's the FAP whisperer, and he absolutely is. That's not a shtick. That is not, you know, being played up. That is 100%. Like, this dude knows FAB. Like, go check out his stuff. He does the weekly FAB report over on FTN.
It's got even better this season, Eric. Like, he's added all these additional elements now with the schedule broken down, lefties versus righties. It's gotten even more valuable this year. It's the truth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it has. And he's made me a better FAB player, so to speak. And is that something I always struggled a little bit with, and something I'm still learning? And that's kind of one of my takeaways from this year is, you know, still trying to improve how I approach and attack FAB, you know, in weekly FAB leagues, because last year I was a bit too gung-ho and kind of used up a lot of my budget early. This year I'm like, all right, let me be a little bit more conservative, but I went too far onto the, you know, the conservative end of the spectrum, and kind of regretted that because I missed out on some players that I probably should have gone in on, and I got myself in a little bit of a hole in, you know, certain categories, certain positions. So, but that's nothing to do with Vlad's recommendations, but he was, you know, I read his report every week, and it was more me being a little less, more conservative. But yeah, getting better at FAB has been a big goal of mine, something I'll continue to kind of work on in the offseason, probably have some discussions with Vlad Sedler. But in a roundabout way, getting back to your original question, as I'm on a rant now, yeah, FTN's been awesome. It's so many good people all the way to the top, even the people behind the scenes that you really don't see. You know, they're not like kind of public facing, putting out content. It's people doing like data and designing the site and all the tools and all this and that across all sports. It's just a phenomenal site. That's why I joined it. You know, outside of, you know, being, you know, buddies with Vlad, I saw the upside with FTN and how it was like the arrow was pointing up in a big way. So that was something I wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, man, I'm so grateful to be here. I love doing my Groove with Govier every single week. Comes out every Tuesday. Of course, Crossed Up with Eric every Wednesday. So we're back to back, y'all. And I love doing that article. It's given me a lot of reps, and it's helped me grow as a writer. And you know, it's all about Vlad for that. I mean, I'm doing the work, obviously, but Vlad gave me the opportunity. He really did. And he's been nothing but courteous to me. He came out in Palazzo in 2021. After I think I did a song about Edwin Rios, the Duran Duran parody, and his Edwin Rios, and you know, something about he hits the ball really far or whatever. Can't remember how the song goes off the top of my head, but we had a blast. He loves the Dodgers, so maybe I snuck into his feelings a little bit easier because he loves the Dodgers. But either way, he was courteous, he was funny. You know, Vlad's underrated part of him, I think, is his sense of humor. He's got a great sense of humor, and that will close the kissing of the ass of Vlad Sedler portion of the show. We'd like to thank you for that. That's sponsored by us, me and Eric Cross. And I'll tell you what, if you want to take it a step farther, if you don't want to get involved with Vlad Sedler this season for baseball, which you still should, there's still a couple weeks left, you might need that stretch run to close out right now. We got the Discord. It's all part of the baseball package. But if you're in football mode now and you're only listening to this just because you enjoy Vlad and Maddie that much and you think FTN's that awesome, then make sure you sign up for the heavy-duty top of the industry football package featuring Nelson Souza. High-stakes FTN fantasy football. It doesn't get better than this. You get access to content all draft season, which if you still got some drafts left, take advantage of it. I know Lions, my bozo Lions, are kicking off against the Chiefs on Thursday. But regular season, Nelson, along with the rest of our awesome team, he's got world-famous fade lists, the targets and fades, rankings, in-season FAV help, the Discord-exclusive high-stakes channel where you can talk to him directly. Use a special code, 20% off for all of our listeners for Nelson's high-stakes package. That's promo code HIGHSTAKES20, HIGHSTAKES20. It's a great, great time. Nelson, by the way, you know, I learned this last time I did the show, Eric, is he's really good at fantasy baseball now, too. He was like top 60 in the main event when I did the show with Paul. We were looking at the overall rankings that night, and I was like, oh, my God. I know Nelson's like a god among fantasy football peeps, but he also has taken that philosophy and just applied it to the main event. So Nelson has got a lot to offer in a variety of ways. And I'm curious, because I don't think you've – have you not played the main event yet, or you haven't committed?
I haven't now, like. I've wanted to. The desire is absolutely there. But at the same time, like, I got, you know, a lot of, you know, stuff going on in my life where I'm, you know, trying to buy a new house and whatnot. So just haven't been. It's more so the financial end of it. Obviously, there's a big financial part of the main events. Maybe next year. But yeah, I'm trying to, like, I just saved up to buy a new car recently, earlier this year. And then the new house for me and the kids is next on my list. So it's like, as much as I want to, and the desire absolutely is there. I'm trying to, like, all right, be smart. You know, you got to use that money for other things right now, but maybe next year. Definitely, I'm going to think long and hard about it next year. So as I've wanted to get in the one last few years, that itch is growing and growing every year. So next year might be the year I dip my toes into that market.
I wanted to get that perspective from you, because last time on the show, talked about how the people who are single entry people, you know, there's a lot of people who play multiple entries. They're Hall of Famers and NFBC, and they've got big bank rolls. But, you know, I ride or die with the single entry people, the people who are trying it for the first time. They've saved up the money, or else maybe they want a main event qualifier as well to get into the main event. Those are my people, man. And I'm always going to be, I guess, with them. I'll feel a special kinship with them, because I love somebody just put, it's a lottery ticket away sometimes. You can win your leagues, but obviously experience pays off. And the more experience you have, the better off you probably be in future endeavors in the main event. But you're also, by the way, Eric seriously is like a really good dad. So I think Thank what you just said there really defined the fact that, hey, yeah, I have a family and like we got stuff we want to do with our life first. So we're going to put the main event on hold, which I think is what a lot of people end up doing anyways. In fact, I would assume that's a pretty common tale. But is there a part of you that's like, man, if I'm not in the main event, am I not going to be amongst like the best players? Or do you think that's hogwash?
Maybe a little hogwash. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of great players play on NFBC. You know, we see it every year. And a lot of those players play main events. There's a reason why, you know, you got to have confidence in yourself, especially if you're ponying up that much money for a league or multiple entries into the main event. You know, you got to have confidence that, hey, I'm not just throwing my money away, that I have a chance to actually return, you know, a positive ROI here. But I think there's obviously other great players that don't dip their, you know, toes into, you know, the high stakes market for what it means, you know, financial. Obviously this world is tough and it's a, you know, tough financially for a lot of people. So, but yeah, a lot of the greatest players do play on NFBC. I've definitely seen that, interacted with a lot of them, played against a lot of them. And yeah, I think I wouldn't, if I never played a main event, I wouldn't be upset about it. But that, again, that desire, that itch is definitely there to like, at least try it once. It's like, all right, you know, I have confidence in my analysis, confidence in my playing, confidence in always improving and overall every year. So why not just, you know, see what I'm capable of, put myself against some of the best players in the world and see what happens, you know? So yeah, definitely. You know, now we keep talking about it, I'm like, the desire keeps growing. So I think there's a, you know, I'd say there's a 75% chance next year I'm dipping my toes into that main event.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? Main event's fun, but the OCs are cool. Have you played OCs or no?
I have not done an OC. I'll probably do some OCs next year, too. I think next year will be a bigger year for me. I might kind of cut back a few DCs, you know, add a main event, add an OC, something like that.
Are you anti-12 team, or is there just another reason you're not interested?
I'm not anti-12 team at all. Like my home keeper league that I started with my buddies back in sophomore year of high school. We're in year 17, 18, whatever it is now. That's a 12-team league. You know, I'm definitely not opposed to 12-team. You know, I like 12s. I like 15s. I like 20s. I think 12 to 20 is, like, the good range for me. Like even some 30s are just a bit much at times. But, yeah, I don't mind 12s at all.
Yeah, I love the OCs, and I really thought I made progress. This year, my pitching got crushed. That's what really burned me this year. My pitching got destroyed in my OCs. I think I have a couple leagues here in my NFBC profile this season where I've got 60 points or 65 points on the hitting side and literally like 19 on the pitching side. It's a massive disparity. And I asked this of Paul, and I thought I'd ask it of you. I mean, there was a lot of talk coming into this year, especially in April, that there was a lot of blow-up starts and that starting pitching was a disaster this season. But I think me and Paul kind of agreed that was short-sighted thinking. That was probably like a little bit too much panic at the time based on what we've seen for the rest of the season. Obviously, the rule change adjustment was very difficult for certain starting pitchers than others. How do you see all that now, where we've been from April to now in that respect?
You know, honestly, it's kind of what I expected because – obviously, we knew that these new rule changes, you know, obviously with the pitch clock being the big one, that some of these slower moving pitchers, you know, like Corbin Burns was a perfect example of that, were probably going to be affected. How much? Obviously, none of us could really, you know, anticipate how much they'd be affected. But, you know, it definitely is a big thing when you start putting time limits on these pitchers. And though, and I played baseball through high school, and even with that much experience, I know, like, you know, baseball, you know, players are creatures of habit. And they have the way they do things, whether they're pitchers or hitters. And when they have to alter that in, you know, a significant way, you know, I don't know like how long Corbin Burns was taking, you know, but, you know, from the time he got the ball from the catcher to when he was pitching. But, you know, if you have to quicken that 3-4 seconds, whatever it is, it might not sound like much. But for someone that, you know, like Corbin Burns, that they're creatures of habit, yeah, that is a big thing. So that's why I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't, you know, running to the hills to like, oh, Corbin Burns sucks, you know, earlier in the year. Again, like look at the profile. Look at, there was a reason why he was, you know, number one, number two starter off the board and had, you know, was the number one fantasy arm or number two over the last, you know, 2-3 years since he broke out back in the shortened 2020 year. And, you know, you gotta, you know, if these guys give you a reason and they've shown a longer track record of performance, you know, give them a bit of time. Like Machado, Corbin Burns, these types, Trey Turner, you know, these guys usually don't just completely fall off a cliff to the point where they go from being elite to, you know, unusable in fantasy. So, but yeah, I've actually been harder in a lot of my leagues on the hitting side of that. I'm looking at my AL labor mix auction team right now, where I'm currently in fifth out of 12. I have 21 points on the hitting side and 46 on the pitching side. So I have the second most pitching points right now. And let's say I'm like ninth or 10th in terms of hitting points. So I think for me generally this year, pitching's actually been pretty solid. I've been a hit on some guys like, you know, like Cole Reagans and these types. I had a few
weeks, yeah.
And so I was able to hit on those. And even though a lot of these teams, even put in this AL labor team, where I look at my offense, and if I like look at the standings, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's probably like a top third offense. And I look, I'm a bottom third offense. So it's been, as I've had guys like, obviously Michael Harris has been up and down on this team. You know, Brian Reynolds has been up and down on this team. You know, this is a team I have Trey Turner on, but you know, my pitching has been absolutely, you know, loaded. So yeah, it's been a weird year. It's usually I'm a little bit stronger on hitting, I think, but this year it's kind of been a little bit of a shift where I've had a lot of teams that have done better on the pitching side for some odd reason. I'm not sure why. Got to dig into that in the off season, but it's been kind of weird.
I think it's 2 years straight for me now where I have missed out or made mistakes with pitching. And last year I was really weak on K's, a lot of strikeout shortages across my dashboard. And then this year, some real major whip disasters and ratio disasters, really. So there's something I'm missing in pitching. And I think this is a pretty common tale. There's a lot of players out there who have a strength on one side. I mean, the ultimate master player is the person who can really be balanced on both sides. Really difficult thing to do. And those are usually, if they're not the best players, they're at least the player who has the best season if they can do that for 1 year. And it's not something that can always carry over year to year as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something that's narrative I've had trouble with in the past with pitching, is kind of finding that blend of, obviously you try to have the best ratios and obviously you got to get strikeouts. And, you know, some years I'd have a lot of strikeouts, but then the ratios wouldn't be the greatest. The next year I'd have better ratios, but the K's wouldn't be the greatest. So that's definitely a delicate balance to have. And, you know, that's why, you know, mixing in these guys like, you know, Merrill Kelly, Aaron Savale, who I tweeted about earlier today, like these guys that are, you're never going to jump for joy drafting these guys. They're not the sexy draft pick, but hey, at the end of the year, they're going to help you out in ratios and offset, you know, maybe you have a higher, you know, ERA and whip guy. And you go with like, I don't know, Spencer Strider's not a great example because obviously he's a stud, but if you go with a couple high K guys early on that might not have the greatest ERA and whip, these are the guys that offset, and that's where you try to find that good balance. And that's something that I struggled with in the past too. That took me several years to try to find that balance, and I think I have found it the last year or two. I feel the best I've ever felt in terms of finding that balance, but it's tough, man. It really is.
I'm thinking about, you know, first off, Cole Reagans. You think this is somebody that we're going to be bidding high on next year coming into 2024, or are you going to slow your roll and kind of be like, well, maybe it was a really good second half? I mean, because the numbers are stellar across the board. It all looks pretty good. The peripherals even look solid. So it looks like he has tapped into something here with his ability to fool hitters eye level with the variety of pitches. There's something going on here for sure.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of a mix of both. You know, I am mostly a believer in what's going on with Cole Reagans this year, which is, it's weird because Kansas City has not had the greatest track record with developing pitchers over the last half decade, right? You know, Brady Singer, you know, kind of a success story. You know, he's been up and
flashes down,
too. Yeah, he's been up pretty up and down, especially this year. But outside of him, it's been a lot of misses. You know, obviously, you know, Jackson Coar, you know, Chris Bubich, even one of their top prospects, Asa Lacy, who was a top, what did he just draft? A top five draft pick a handful of years ago. And last time I checked, his ERA was like 11 or something like that. So, you know, they've had a lot of misses in pitching, so it's weird to see someone, and it's not like Texas is a pitching factory by any means. They're not, you know, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, the Dodgers, but see someone go to Kansas City and just completely go from, you know, a guy that showed flashes of good stuff, but just the wacky, inconsistent performance to a guy that has been, what, a top five pitcher over the last month and a half. So I definitely believe the fastball velocity is up. He's kind of made adjustments to the arsenal. There's a lot of tangible changes that have been made here, which is always encouraging and makes me feel better about these breakout types. But at the same time, while I am a believer for the most part in what Reagan's has done, I do think he's going to be out of my price range next year. Like I think, what, probably top 50 at this point, unless something happens. If he continues like this and has a pretty good last, you know, four or five starts, I think we're probably looking at a top 20 starter next year, top 50.
Easy.
And as much as I like Reagan's and believe in him, that's higher than I'm going to want to pay, because you're paying for him to maintain or even improve what he's done. So I think that this, you know, it's a bit of a risky kind of scenario. So yeah, he's not one I'm probably gonna have really any shares of next year, but yeah, we'll see what that ADP is rolling around in January, February.
Yeah, you know, a guy that I really blew it on is an example of my failure when it comes to pitching. I think I have to say, who someone we've completely forgotten about probably, is Eric Lauer. Like, Eric Lauer was a name. He was not a guy who was going top 200, really, but he was a guy that was going top 250-ish, the 300 at the latest, and he could be a nice depth piece who could fill out a staff. And he just disappeared. I mean, he's gone now. I mean, I know he's had some issues and things that have been going on with him in his life, and I get that completely. I get that as much as anybody. But I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why I thought he was really going to take a step forward this year when I honestly think about it. I try to think back to the draft season, Eric, and like, okay, so I was thinking, because I drafted Eric Lauer pretty heavily. I thought he'd be a nice piece to round out my 15-team rotations, and that ended up being a big mistake.
Yeah, and Lauer kind of fits in that. Obviously, he's not quite as good as, you know, Savali and Merrill Kelly, but he kind of fits into that category where not the sexiest arm around, but he was steady. He was productive. Yeah. He was a guy that probably was on a lot of, you know, productive teams last year for fantasy purposes. And yeah, he just hasn't been there as good this year, taking a big step back. And, you know, for me, I was looking back at my player shares here. You know, my guy who was more in the, you know, the sexy buckets is Edward Cabrera. That was my dude. Like, you know, around, I think he was going around pick 200 or so, maybe a little bit after 200. I was getting him everywhere I could. I was even in Dynasty, I was trading for him. So I was like, all right, the stuff is still really good. Like, he's shown that, but he's one where just too many walks did him in, just not locating his pitches. And even though he's got the flashy stuff, I mean, he's capable of dominating on any given night, those nights are few and far between, just given the inconsistencies he's shown. So that was a big miss, because I was kind of like, all right, this is a guy that I'm going to get as like my SP5 or so for the most part, and a guy that I think is going to have SP2 upside by the end of the season. And that has not been the case, as, you know, he's been demoted, I think, twice this year to AAA. Definitely. That was one of my bigger misses this year, was Edward Cabrera.
Well, he's back, right? He's back again.
He's back now, yeah. and he's Pitching Ninja posted the gif of him throwing a 95-mile-an-hour changeup, which every time I see that, I just laugh so hard, because, you know, obviously growing up, you know, obviously, you know, the harder changeups are becoming more of a thing, but the first guy that at least I can remember that threw the harder changeup was Felix Hernandez. You know, and his was like 88, 89, 90. And now we see guys throw 93-mile-an-hour changeups, and it's just ridiculous to see where the game has gone.
Yeah, that's strange. You know, now that you mention your player shares, I'm looking at mine, and my top pitcher is drafted. No, most drafted pitcher is Sandy Alcantara. Complicated. Not god awful, obviously. Complicated, but
up and down. Definitely gotten better.
Yeah, it's, again, this is an example of perspective and patience, and knowing that eventually a guy who's shown you a track record should get it right. Don't panic. And he's proven that. He's had much better second half than his first half. Then Kenta Maeda was my second most drafted starter. That actually was not a terrible call at all.
Yeah. He's been steady this year.
And then Gavin Williams.
Love him.
Yeah, I love him. I mean, Logan Webb, Matt Manning, Paul Blackburn. These aren't terrible choices. But
yeah,
somewhere along the line here, you know, I brought this up. I got to ask you about it, because I asked Paul about it. You know, this freebie that went down on NFBC last month on a Monday when the site went down and everybody freaked out, and they were given a freebie to make any roster changes, even though the games had already started. And I, as I mentioned on the last show, I got to mention again, I started Joey Wentz on a horrendous two-stepper. And I think it's a lot of those aggressive two-steppers. You know, you co-manage with me, and you could tell the audience, you know, there was a lot of times where you had to talk me out. I think I might get too excited about too many players when it comes to fab. We would have our weekly fab discussion every Sunday, and I remember you all the time, Eric would say, no, man, let's not do that. No, you don't want to do that. Come on. No, let's go in a different direction. I think we can wait. Or you would just say, matter of fact, like, no, I don't think we should add him. I'd be like, oh, okay. And that ended up working out well because we won. So I really need Eric back in my life for all of the teams I draft, apparently.
No, that's it. We fed off each other. You know, again, we didn't always agree. There's sometimes, you know, you wanted to go in on a guy or I wanted to go in on a guy or vice versa. And we had to make some compromises along the way. And that's obviously, you know, how you succeed as a duo. So, but yeah, I've been aggressive on two-step guys too, but it's something I even put in my weekly article, the pitcher planner I do over on FTN that comes out every Sunday morning, that, you know, not all two-star pitchers are worthwhile, you know, starters, so to speak, because, you know, you want to, we get caught up in like, oh, the volume. But yep. At the same time, like, you know, if the two-star option is like, I don't know, a Ryan Nelson or someone like that, like, all right, you know, okay, yeah, you might get what, 9, 10, 11 innings out of him as opposed to, you know, 5 or 6, but at what cost? You know,
exactly.
At what cost are, you know, the damage you're doing to your ratios if just for the extra couple innings or extra couple Ks? You know, it's almost not worth it unless it's, like I said, probably, you know, every week there's probably, what, 30 to 40 two-star guys. And as I break them down by like must start, like obvious, like, you know, the big names, and then, you know, should start, depends on options, then don't start. And every week there's probably at least 5, 6, 7 guys where I'm like, nope. Like, you know, Chris Flexen has a 2-start week. I don't care. I don't want that.
Yeah.
But that's something I used to get, like, try to, you know, load up on those guys. And then I'm like, wait a minute. What am I doing here? I got to take a step back and like look at the big picture. Like, what am I doing to my ratios just for the extra little bit of volume that these guys bring?
Calm down. Take a breath. Yep. Exactly. Just like we talked about when it's panic time. I think that's actually an area that needs to be explored further, is the benefits or the negative outcomes of the two-steppers, and how much is it really worth it in roto leagues versus other styles where you're trying to win a head-to-head matchup. I think there's a big difference there. And I think, again, you know, the streams get crossed on the formats and the styles, and some people, including myself, I'm a big head-to-head guy. I love playing head-to-head. And maybe I think about two-steppers and volume to try to win a week versus the price I pay for a full season to have a bad week like Joey Wentz gave me during the freebie. This is a point of contention I think I'm actually going to focus on. That we just kind of stumbled upon this, but I think that's a really good point on your part.
Yeah, and finding that balance in your lineup too of, you know, the 2-star guys versus the 1-star guys, it's tough. You know, like I just put up my top 100 starting pitcher rankings for last week's article, or this current week, I should say. And like two guys that are kind of, we're almost back to back, was like, all right, do I want a 2-start JP France, or do I want like a 1-start John Gray or a 1-start Christian Javier? So that those are definitely tough decisions. Like, obviously, you know, your stud 1-star guys, you're going to start regardless, but, you know, like, what if you had, like, you know, like Chris Sale, or, you know, he's been better lately, which I shouldn't use Chris Sale, but like a Braxton Garrett, a Jose Quintana, guys like that, or the 2-star guys that might not be the bigger names. So that's definitely, it's another tough blend. Like, I think winning fantasy baseball comes down to finding that balance in a lot of different areas, including the 1-start versus 2-start kind of battle that you have faced on your teams every week. And it's tough, you know, and I don't think I've perfected it by any means. I'm still trying to get better at that too.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Before we go, I do want to ask you about the Sox. You know a thing or two about the Red Sox. I'm just curious how you've seen the season, how you see the status, and I know you've been pretty hard on Mr. Bloom and the front office. Obviously, it's got to be super painful to see Mookie Betts come back recently, and now he's MVP candidate. That was such a mistake. I mean, obviously, that's a no-brainer, a big error trading Mookie Betts. But, you know, the Sox have been competitive this year in arguably the toughest division in baseball. So How is the 2023 version? What's the status overall of the Boston Red Sox?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, I've been called a homer in the past, and then this year's kind of shifted to, oh, well, you're just a hater, you know, because you know, I have been critical, and I'm not one to shy away from being vocal about it either. And, you know, and obviously I want my team to win. I think people think like, oh, you want the Red Sox to lose? No. I watch them every night or almost every night. I want them to win, obviously. You know, I invest, you know, 6-7 months of my year in this team. And yeah, it's been a struggle to see where we were, where we are now. I mean, I give Bloom credit. He's definitely built up the farm system. It's been a very different approach. Obviously, Dombrowski's all like, win now, trade the chips, go for it now. Yep. And then Bloom.
I know
like,
about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you do. Absolutely. And Bloom's much on the other end of the spectrum. But, you know, just looking, stepping back, first off, if I had bet money, I think the over-under for their win total was like 79-ish or so. I would have lost money because they're, you know, barring a dreadful September, they're probably going to go over by several wins. And I would have lost money. So I would have taken the under on that. But at the same time, there's still – I'm trying to just look at the positives here from the season. Tristan Cass is kind of blooming into, you know, one of the better first basemen in baseball offensively as over the last few months. Has been fun to watch. You know, obviously Devers is doing Devers things. You know, Sadan Rafaela, who they're not even playing right now for the most part, but I've seen him come through Double A. He's very exciting on both sides of the ball. Great defender, great athlete. You know, power, speed blend, all of that. So, definitely some good things. You know, Yoshida, I think exceeded expectations, or at least met, probably exceeded expectations this year. So very, very exciting there, and seeing Brayan Bello kind of develop into, you know, a pretty good starter at this level and still have upside for more. So yeah, definitely it's been a weird year. It's been an up and down year. Just when you think they're out of it, they go on a winning streak. Then when you think they're getting back into it, they slump and lose to like Kansas City. So overall, it's been a weird year, but then again, I'm taking those little positives here and there, especially with the younger players that we have. And you know, Adam Duvall, outside of his long IL stint, has been pretty damn good this year. So if you held on to him or were able to pick him up in Fab when he was, you know, dropped because he was on the IL, and he's been a pretty good, you know, he's been on a surge here lately. So yeah, overall, I mean, there's some bright spots here, but it's been a weird year. I don't know if I want to say it's been a good year or a bad year. It's been a weird year. And I feel like a lot of Red Sox fans are kind of agree with that even if you're a Bloom guy or not a Bloom guy, it's been kind of an odd year overall.
Maso Menos. Yeah. So complicated, confusing. Actually,
yeah, it's
both
it's complicated. Yeah,
the Red Sox and the Tigers. I think they're both going to hit their overs for win totals. The Tigers, yeah. I predicted on Ariel Cohn's show, Beat the Shift, before the season started, that the Tigers would have 70 wins this year. It's looking good. I'm telling you, it's looking good.
And same with you guys. You know, you got Torkelson starting to heat up now. You know, Riley Green has flashed some good stuff. Carey Carpenter has been like
Carps.
Yeah, he's been like quietly, and I took him in the rookie draft that we did at First Pitch Arizona. He's been like carrying my team. I think I'm actually in first in that. We picked rookies just for this year. Like no move. It's like a rookie only DC or of sorts.
Oh yeah,
rookie only gladiator. Actually, there's no benches. We picked starting lineups, but I took Carpenter late. I'm like, oh yeah, he'll get some run with Detroit. So yeah, Carpenter's been pretty good. Tarek Skubal has shown pretty good at times, and Matt Manning's. You know, maybe he's not going to reach his expectations that we once had for him, but he's been pitching okay, serviceable back end arm. You know, you guys got your boy Justin Henry Malloy, who's could be up
still hasn't
now.
Gotten called up.
I know he's super underrated. You know, Colt Keith is one of the better bats in the minor league. So
Parker Meadows just came up, and he's going to be
Meadows,
he might be better than Austin. I mean, Austin obviously his career is gone the way it's gone because of his mental health issues, but Parker is 6'5" and he can fly. So
absolutely.
It's actually the last thing I'll mention here. Cause somebody told me that maybe Al Avila should get, he got a lot of flack here. He got fired last year. Scott Harris took over. People are saying now, well, maybe Avila, he did an okay job, but I would argue that maybe in just this year alone, the player development has already improved that much under Scott Harris.
Yeah. I think it's definitely taken a step forward. And, you guys got, Max Clark in the draft, a very exciting guy that, Chris Clegg and I had the pleasure of interviewing. I think around a year ago now. And
not
only does, you know, he have all the tools in the world to be, you know, an all-star caliber player, but like this kid had his head screwed on straight. Like he was a fan of the game. You know, he was, you know, the work ethic, all the intangibles that you hear about him, like the work ethic, you know, just showing up early, staying late, all that stuff that doesn't show up in a box score or on any real, you know, any scouting report, anything like that. You know, he has. So obviously he's 3-4 years away, but yeah, you guys are good in the draft too. You guys have a pretty good draft.
Exciting times here. Tigers versus Red Sox, ALCS in 3 years. And I'm sure someone will hit a grand slam and, you know, someone will fall over the wall and some security guard will become a legend. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen again. But regardless, I don't care what happens in the future. Talk of baseball with Eric Cross is always a good time. I'm so glad that Vlad and Maddie gave us the opportunity to do so. I want to thank them for letting us sit in here. Boy, I mean, anything else to push here as the season comes to a close, Eric? I'll finish my Groove with Goviers here every Tuesday until the season ends.
Yeah, I got crossed up there every Wednesday. You know, again, you're hitting third, I'm hitting cleanup on in the weekly schedule there, and Vlad's hitting leadoff, Matty Wood's hitting in the two-hole. But, yeah, obviously great content over at FTN every day. I love doing the crossed up, kind of like just a rotating dynasty, mostly dynasty focused piece there. And then every weekend on Sunday mornings doing my weekly pitching planner, which has really been a fun, it's a little bit different. I've never done this type of, I've done like, you know, rest of season rankings, but never like looking at an individual week, you know, like looking at matchups there. And so that was a really fun and really opened my eyes to a lot of things. I think it actually helped me overall as an analyst and as a player. And obviously I do some stuff over at Roto Baller as well. And got my Patreon, all my rankings there, Toolshed Podcast. I mean, I love doing this. It's so fun that we get to do this every day. And it's always fun, you know, you and I chat, you know, off and on throughout the year. And it's so, felt like a conversation that you and I could have had like on the phone or something. That we just, you know, happen to be recording it for the folks at FTN. So, yeah, a lot of fun as usual, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I find that once you get going, you really get into a groove. And I felt that groove, too. I would share in that moment of enjoyment. Talking baseball there, Cross. A lot of fun. Thanks again, Vladdy and Matt. Don't forget, CFTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And I'm sure the fellows will be back next week. I already mentioned the high stakes. Nelson Souza, high stakes 20. High stakes package. It's awesome. 20% off. Use that promo code, high stakes 20. You can follow me on Twitter, MJ Govier, Eric Cross 04, or what used to be known as Twitter, whatever the hell you call it. And that's going to do it. You can also catch me on the Palazzo Podcast, 2Ls, 2Zs, if you want to check out my show that I do every week. Thanks again, everybody. Pleasure to sit in. For Eric, I'm Michael. We'll catch you later. Get the money, dollar, dollar.